Yeah.
Okay. So I'm talking with Breda O'Brien, and Breda, the vote has passed, and the vote was no, and or the vote was yes, and obviously you were campaigning for no. I mean, do you feel now that your concerns, there was still a significant minority that voted no. I mean, do you think that their concerns will be heard or that they have been understood?
I don't think they were ever understood. It's a very significant minority, a large minority, more than has voted for any one political party in recent times or is likely to vote for a political party in the near future. And I think that the frame of the referendum was it's all about love, it's all about equality, it's all about love, it's all about equality. And I think people very much bought into that, and for obvious reasons then are delighted that it's passed. But in fact, it was never that simple. We were altering the constitution. It has vast repercussions for our family law in all sorts of areas, not just in assisted human reproduction, but in everything from, you know, for example, one of the grounds for judicial separation is adultery. How do you define adultery? If you know, so that's going to have to be changed. If it's between a same-sex couple, what is adultery? They've had to alter it in Britain so that there are different grounds for non-consummation. They've dropped consummation as a concept. These might sound very technical, but if you need a judicial separation, or if you want, you know, or if your marriage isn't working out and you discover, well, no, actually, because we now have same-sex marriage, non-consummation is no longer what it used to be. These are going to play themselves out for years and years and years in the family courts, and we will discover that it wasn't really just about love and equality.
But I suppose, was marriage ever about that in a sense? I mean, marriage in the past wasn't necessarily about love and equality either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, marriage has evolved, I think, more positively. There was a huge amount about property and about family lines and bloodlines and all of that kind of thing. But I think that there was the kind of what I would call egalitarian partnership that we had in terms of marriage was a very positive thing. And the way that it bonded people by and large to their children, even though, of course, divorce rates have risen, I think was a very positive thing. And I think by losing the gender complementarity aspect of marriage, we have altered it quite fundamentally. And I find that sad. It's not, I would very, very happily see people in same-sex relationships having their relationships recognised. I was supportive by and large of what they did in civil partnership. I just think it's a pity that there's now no institution that specifically looks at that gender complementarity, that yin and yang, if you want to use that phrase, and what it results in.
But I suppose people saw that they had been left out, and they saw that it was sort of an apartheid almost. It was like marriage for one group but not for the other group.
Yeah, but it's the side effect of that, though, was that if you weren't included in marriage, you were therefore not equal, which sent a very strange message to people who were in lone parent relationships or who had never been asked to be married. Like, marriage was never about a badge of honour or a badge of equality, really. And I found that I could understand very much why a gay person might feel that. But I also felt that the consequences of, in a sense, giving people this this affirmation that they sought for were so much greater than we were ever really allowed to explore. Like, I was quite struck by somebody who was a no voter and quite, you know, telling me that her husband hadn't really heard any of the arguments up to the day before. And you kind of think, well, they were on the newspapers, they were on the radio, they were everywhere. But he just hadn't, and he's an educated person and so on. So I think that we were just never allowed to play out the wider consequences, really, to everybody. And of course, a lot of people aren't tuning into traditional media any longer.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, marriage in itself, I suppose, would have had consequences. And if you look at heterosexual marriage, I mean, there was often negative consequences. There was often things that went wrong. I mean, do now that same-sex marriage has passed, I mean, do they not have the same right to give it a go and to mess it up if it happens that way? Or maybe they'll make the institution something better, something different, something more equal in a way.
Well, it's interesting because I would be the first to say that it's heterosexuals that have really done most damage to marriage, you know, and that we've kind of, one of the negative aspects is that we've gone so much towards a personal fulfillment model of marriage, which I think is a step too far, that it's not just about two adults and their personal fulfillment, that I think it's a societal institution with huge responsibilities. And you know, obviously it's about love, obviously, but it's about an awful lot more than that. So I would have no problem with that. But the idea that, you know, that because heterosexuals have, in a sense, done damage to it, there's no harm in wiping out, I think, is a bit strange. And I'll give you an example. Atlantic, the monthly magazine in America, a lot of people would know it, did a very interesting feature on gay marriage, saying that it was better than heterosexual marriage. There was less rigid roles, that there was more egalitarianism. And then at the very end, they said, and of course, monogamy is not really part of it. In the same way as it is for opposite sex couples. And they said that quite often among male couples, that's the bringing the first child into the relationship signals, you know, the end of the kind of the, and monogamy, there's this term monogamish, which is, you know, where people are, fidelity is a different, is looked at differently. So, and the interesting thing was in the Atlantic article, they said, well, why don't we take all the good things and just ignore this part, because this doesn't fit with opposite sex relationships in the same way. And I thought that was amazing, because I don't think that same sex relationships are any worse or any better, but they're certainly different. But we weren't allowed to acknowledge that difference. So we kind of crushed kind of diversity in a way and said everybody's the same, everybody's the same needs, and the same institutions meet those needs. But I don't think they actually do. And that was what the gay people on our side of the fence were saying. They were saying civil partnership really suits our kinds of relationships, and we have struggled very hard to get them. And of course, civil partnerships are now being phased out. So the people who spent 10 or 11 years struggling to get civil partnership for gay people now don't have that option. Then there will be no new civil partnerships. So there is a loss for gay people as well, for gay people who actually wanted civil partnership.
That's a point, I suppose, that was never really raised, in a sense, if you wanted to keep civil partnership, or that you wanted to keep that bond without making it a more, I suppose, in marriage, in sense, is harder to dissolve. I know that was one of the things people had concerns about, that, you know, civil partnership was more easily dissolvable, and they sort of preferred that relationship almost, or they prefer that level of commitment.
A friend of mine told me about something interesting about an opposite sex couple that had been together for many years, but were beginning to be concerned about inheritance and so on, and said, well, we want a civil partnership. And then were utterly disgusted to discover that it was only for gay people, because they felt it would suit the needs of their relationship. And then doubly disgusted to see that they couldn't even lobby to get civil partnerships extended to opposite sex people, that they were being phased out. But that was never discussed. The government never drew attention to that. Now, there was kind of a hint in that they had done it in Britain, but they never explicitly said, we're going to remove this option, which suits a lot of people, because a lot of people have entered into it, not as a sign of a second-class institution, but because it took care of the inheritance, it took care of the tax, it took care of the social welfare, it took care of all sorts of things, but also it was easier to get out of, you know.
So. Yes, it wasn't quite the permanent commitment that marriage would be. But I suppose now, either way, yes has decided, yes has won the day. Are there other ways, though, that some of the concerns that you're looking at, or the concerns that you've mentioned, could still be met, that they could still be met in, you know, the family and relationship bills, or they could still be met in human reproduction bills, that, you know, that there could be other ways to look at some of those issues?
Well, I think there are a number of areas that are going to become of grave concern. One is education. One is what is going to be allowed to be taught in schools. And we were kind of told, well, they'll teach what they always taught in religion class, and then in civics class they'll teach something else. But that's not how it works at primary school. It's an integrated curriculum. And I've seen some materials that I found very troubling from a Catholic point of view, which are developed by the INTO and Glenn, you know, which were presenting the idea that all family forms are exactly the same, which I think is, it's difficult from a Catholic perspective to see how you could reconcile that with Catholic teaching. Obviously, we respect everyone, respect every family form. Teachers are very, very sensitive to not, you know, making people feel odd, whether it's a family breakdown or whether it's two dads or whatever. But this is going way beyond that. And I think there needs to be reassurances on that. In relation to assisted human reproduction, I don't feel that the present government, or actually any of the major political parties, actually understand the ramifications of it, or want to. I think we're in a situation very similar to the 1940s, when there were forced adoptions and there was no proper processes. I was just reading recently about a documentary where they talked about the lack of a proper adoption process. I think in time to come that surrogacy will be seen as a form of kind of half adoption or almost forced adoption, where and there's absolutely no control over who can be a surrogate, who can avail of a surrogate. And Mr. Leif Radker made some noises about putting in place some kind of adoption process, and I hope he'll keep that promise. That is really, really important, because at the moment it's the vastly wealthy fertility industry who is the gatekeeper. So you have the extraordinary situation that the people who are going to make money out of selling you services are the ones who decide whether you're suitable to receive those services, and there's a vast conflict of interest. So I think there are all those kinds of issues. Like, in an ideal world, I wish we would just follow the example of Germany and Austria and just ban surrogacy, but I cannot see the current government or any combination of the current political parties doing that.
Mm. And yet, in a way, that issue is separate to some degree, because, you know, it is an issue that in many ways heterosexual couples have been ahead of the curve on surrogacy. And yes, of course, a gay couple, if they want to bring their own natural born or their own biological child into the world, surrogacy is definitely an option for them. But it is kind of a separate issue in a way, isn't it?
Well, in relation to two gay men, it's the only option if they want a genetically related child. And in every country where it has been introduced, or every state in the United States...
It's not quite the only option in the sense...
It is a genetically related child.
No, but it would mean they could maybe pair up with a lesbian couple and, you know, group parent or something. I mean, surrogacy isn't necessarily the only way that they could do it. Or their sister or something. You know what I mean? Like a hired commercial surrogate wouldn't be their only option.
Yeah, but I think most people would think that it's difficult enough coping with two parents without having, you know, four parents. And legally, there is no way that they can all be parents, even under the new legislation. So I think that would be highly problematic. Like, people were at pains to emphasise the pair bonding aspect of this. And if we're, you know, there is a reason for that. But it's because they're two parents. So I think in terms, I would have a lot of difficulties about somebody choosing to pair up with, so that a child is going to have four parents from the very first moment. I think it would be extraordinarily messy. And given that, say, in lesbian couples there's a much higher breakdown rate than there is between heterosexual couples or even gay couples, the likelihood of the relationship lasting, I think, would have to be assessed very, very carefully. But in terms of surrogacy, sure, heterosexual people use it, and I have a huge problem with that as well, particularly when it's exploitative of women in the third world. But every time gay marriage is introduced in a state in the United States, the demand surges, and we have that from the fertility industry itself. And so it is definitely related. There is definitely a relationship. And during the campaign, we had, I don't know if you know, the Druitt Barlow family. They are two gay men that have five children by surrogates, and they're involved with the British Surrogacy Centre. And they were putting up fake posters saying "Vote Yes," and then on the bottom, British Surrogacy Centre. So they definitely saw a link between it. So I think that obviously it has to be regulated for everyone. But this was never an anti-gay thing anyway, because it does, as you say, concern straight people as well. But I think the best way to go would be to ban it.
Mm-hmm. And so now, I suppose, going forward, what would you like to... Well, with surrogacy, you'd like to see it banned. But, you know, are there other areas that that would leave you reassured that the voice of the no were listened to, that significant minority would be listened to?
I'm not at all confident we would be listened to. I feel that there was such a painting of people who are on the no side as homophobic or bigoted or regressive. You know, we now have apparently a new tolerant open Ireland because we have gay marriage, but I'm not sure how far the tolerance actually extends. I would be greatly reassured if we were reassured that schools would not have to implement that INTO-SBHE course, for example. I would be reassured if I felt there was going to be adequate protections in relation to surrogacy. I would be reassured if people stopped implying that anybody who voted no was regressive. But to be honest, I can't see any of those things happening. I would love to see them happen, and I'm open to be surprised, but I can't really see them happening.
Okay, Breda, thank you very much.
I hope I'm not coming across as too negative, but
no,
to be honest,
no, no.
I just don't. I see it getting worse.